This is The Podlight, a podcast produced by San Jose Spotlight, San Jose's first nonprofit news organization dedicated to independent political and business reporting. I'm your host, Editor Nick Preciado. We're just days away from the March 5th primary election here in California, and numerous Silicon Valley candidates are competing for seats in Congress, the state legislature, and local governing bodies. This includes the Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors and the San Jose City Council. Several seats are open races due to the incumbent terming out, seeking higher office, or retiring, including the 16th Congressional District. With Congresswoman Anna Issue set to retire, Silicon Valley politicos are vying for the first open congressional seat in the region in more than two decades. Joining me to talk more about the upcoming election are Garrett Percival and Larry Gersten. Garrett Percival is a professor and chair of the Political Science Department at San Jose State University. Welcome to the show, Garrett.
Thanks for having me.
And Larry Gersten is a professor emeritus of political science at San Jose State University and also a political analyst for NBC Bay Area TV. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Nice to be with you.
You guys have actually been on the show before. It's nice to have this discussion again with the election. So let's start with the big race, California's 16th Congressional District. There are numerous candidates, including former San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo, Santa Clara County Supervisor Joe Simidian, Assemblymember Evan Lowe, retired Marine Peter Dixon, Palo Alto Councilmember Julie Lescott-Hames, among several others. Who do you see moving on to the top two runoff in November? Larry, let's start with you, and then Garrett, we'll hear from you next.
I think conventional wisdom would probably suggest Liccardo and Simidian. Liccardo, because of course about a third of that district, City San Jose, so he has great name recognition. Simidian, because as a member of the Palo Alto City Council, the mayor, assembly, senate, supervisor, you name it, he's had responsibility for 14 of the 15 cities. So he is really well known. In that little poll we did, by the way, he had the greatest loyalty. That was the question that struck me as perhaps the most significant when it comes to that race. I think another person you want to not forget, in addition to those top two, is Peter Dixon. I live in the district, and we have been flooded with Dixon mail. And obviously, the pockets are fairly deep there. He donated, borrowed, about $600,000 that we know of from his campaign, perhaps more. He's got to be considered in the top tier, even though many of us did not originally think so. That's my opinion on that one.
Garrett, go ahead.
Yeah, it's a really interesting race for a lot of reasons. It's a open competitive race with high quality candidates. So we don't, in terms of the openness and open seat, we don't see that very often in the area. I think one thing to keep in mind here is what Republicans are going to do. So it's the party registration in this district, I think it's about 3-1 Democrats outnumbering Republicans. Carl Ryan, one of the Republicans, one of the two, I think, Republicans in the race. Be interesting to see, though, if Republicans vote for him or maybe vote strategically. I noticed looking at the campaign, Liccardo seems to be really trying to appeal to some of those moderate potential swing voters, talking about working across the aisle, listening to people who don't necessarily agree with him, and so forth. So, if Simidian is considered the front runner, which I think I agree with Larry, is probably is trying to fit into that second spot, is between he and Dixon. And then the other thing I think to keep in mind is that if Simidian and Liccardo split the vote, does it offer opportunities for someone like Evan Lowe to come in? You have a district that's about 30% Asian in terms of registration, so has a strong network within the Asian community, given his work at that state level and the local level as well. So really, I think competitive race has been fun to watch.
Yeah, and Evan Lowe, of course, also has close connections with the gay community. And we don't want to underestimate the power and the influence of the gay community in this area. It's pretty profound. And so you put those two together, and, assuming there's a higher turnout from those two groups than others, and he could sneak in. He could. He absolutely could. Another one or two things, and one is, let's not forget that Simidian has Eshoo's endorsement. And there's always this discussion, what's the value of an endorsement? And boy, I don't know. But I mean, it could be telling in this race, particularly since a bunch of them are bunched up. So it'll be interesting. You're right. The top two. So will the Democrats split everything up in such a way where one of those Republicans can sneak in, like Steve Garvey is viewed in the Senate race? Maybe. And bottom line is, in that poll, we saw something like 35-36% undecided. Anybody who's got the answer right now, you know, I'd like to get his lottery numbers. I mean, you know, it's tough.
And yeah, I wanted to touch on that poll too. For listeners, that's an independent poll sponsored by San Jose Spotlight. It showed Sam Liccardo and Joseph Median as the leading candidates, but it also revealed that 1/3 of voters are undecided. I wanted to get your take on this. What effect could all those undecided voters have on this race?
Yeah, two things. I would be reluctant to give a whole lot of credence to the way those guys were in the standings, only because that poll had a plus or minus, I forgot what it was, 4 or 5. Which is,
yeah, I think it was 5.
Yeah, that's a 10% swing. And you could include everybody in there. You probably could include my mother-in-law, and you wouldn't want her in that. I mean, you know, it's very broad. And as far as the undecided, you know, who knows? I mean, and that gets to not only how they vote, but what the turnout is. And my guess is the undecideds would have a lower turnout than the others. I think it's real hard to know where they're going.
Anything to add to that, Garrett?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you're going to have a lot of people making up their minds just in the last week. And it's, you know, with all these campaigns, it's trying to get people to pay attention and get out your most, you know, the voters you're targeting the most. So that's what it's going to come down to. So lots of room for persuasion here.
Let's talk about another one of those candidates, kind of segueing into a different race. You mentioned Evan Lowe, Assemblymember Evan Lowe. He's running for a Shoe's old seat. He's leaving his assembly seat up for grabs. There are a few people running. Candidates include Patrick Arends, who currently works for Lowe, Sunnyvale Council member Omar Din, and Santa Clara County Board of Education member Tara Shu Krishnan. There's a few others here. I'm curious to know how you see that moving forward. It's always interesting to me this time of year with this election cycle, because you see people trying to move up to a higher office and then other people from lower office filling their seat. Garrett, let's start with you on this.
Right. Another, I think, just interesting race in terms of its competitiveness. And then you also, I just think, you know, I think this race, perhaps there's a couple others too, I think just really exemplifies a new generation, new cohort of leadership, relatively young candidates in this race who are, in these cases, have not served, except Omar Din, of course, is a Sunnyvale City Council member, but, you know, like Patrick Arends, who, you know, has not served in the City Council, but is an elected official. But nonetheless, you know, I think making the jump to a state level office is a big leap. It's difficult to do. So I think it's, you know, kudos to all these candidates for you know, getting involved and making a run at it. I think similar to Larry's point, you know, with Joe Simidian and him having the endorsement of Anna Eshoo, in this case, Patrick Arends has the endorsement of his boss, Evan Lowe, who's held the seat for, you know, 10 years. I see him as the front runner. I think he's done a really good job of building a very effective political network, particularly within Democratic circles, and also has extensive experience working in the district and in the Capitol as a staff member for Lowe. I see him, and my guess is looking at, just in terms of money raise and organization, sort of professionalization of the campaign, that Tara Shri Krishnan would be my other pick to move forward in that race.
Recent data in terms of independent expenditures and PACs show that Sri Krishnan has collected a lot of money, second to Arends, more than anybody else. As a matter of fact, Arends is second. Arends, and they both were talking about $500,000 or more. That's a lot in an assembly race, but like Garrick said, it's open. So, you know, we have to include that as part of the dynamic here. But, you know, there's nothing like working for an elected official to know how to become an elected official. And that's the secret, I think, for Arends. That's the card that he may be playing. And you know, the Rolodex is right there for you. He got Lowe's endorsement. So I think he's got to be in that top two. He's got to be in that top two. I'd be shocked because he has, like Eric said, he's worked really well because he's learned from one of the greatest, you know, and the access to all of those sources, fundraising sources are, you know, it's pretty impressive. And he's got a list here of IEDs and PACs that have come out strong for him. So that could also be used against him, by the way, depending upon the kind of mailers that come out at the last minute.
Sure. And could you maybe expand on that a bit, Larry, with the, you know, importance of that money plays in this race, and how could that be used against him, just as an example?
Well, you know, these days, money, it's awfully necessary for anybody to do well, but it also can be used as a source of trying to tilt the outcome. Money buys the election. Okay, that kind of argument. Now, we've looked at enough elections to know that money does not always buy an election. Ask Meg Whitman, who spent $150 million of her money to win the governorship in I think it was 2000, maybe it was 1998, against Jerry Brown. I can't remember what year it was. And no, 2010 against Jerry Brown. And he spent $25 million. And my guess is he retired with $24 million of it. I mean, you know, it doesn't always speak to winning. But like we've always said, it's better to have it than not. And on the other hand, you know, people can say, well, he's buying to try it. And that's a very attractive statement to make in this era where there's so much suspicion about money in politics. It's one of those things where people don't like it, but they sure like the ads it buys, which are largely negative.
Let's move on to the Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors races. Looking at District 5, Santa Clara County Supervisor Joe Simidian, we've talked about how he's running for Congressional District 16. He's seeking Anna Eshoo's seat, has her endorsement. So there's several people looking to replace him. We've got, let me see here, Mountain View Councilmember Margaret Abe Koga, Sally Lieber, Chair of the State Board of Equalization, former Cupertino Mayor Barry Chang, Dr. Peter Fung, and business owner Sandy Sands. Who do you see advancing here? And this is another one of those instances where we see somebody from a lower office moving up. Though in Samidian's case, it's a little unique because he served in the state previously, and now he's seeking a much higher office federally.
Well, you got a good race here. And again, it should not be a surprise because it's an open race. Margaret Abe Koga is well known. She's probably going to have a lot of support from the north area of this district, and I think that's an important area because I suspect, without having data, that there's probably going to be a higher turnout in that area. So the more votes you can gather, the better. Sally Lieber has been around a long time, and former assembly member, a member of the Board of Equalization. I don't know how much she's going to be able to leverage the Board of Equalization. Because nobody knows what that is, and for good reason. So that's hard to know. As far as the others go, well, Barry Chang has been around forever, you know, has been running for the Board of Supervisors or other offices since they've existed. And it's hard to know whether the name recognition will do much. But you've got a good selection there. And again, this is a period when a lot of people are bemoaning the loss of women in elective offices because of retirements. And so I think that may be a bonus for one of those two women, help them perhaps.
I think I agree with Larry. I think Margaret Abe Koga is the front runner. I agree. She's probably going to run very strongly in northern part of the district. Done a really effective job talking some of her experiences and what she feels as her accomplishments as a former mayor of Mountain View, highlighting minimum wage, cost of living issues, helping the city through through COVID. Lieber's interesting, I think, in terms of how she's framing her, I think, candidacy and focusing on her experience in state government. I agree with the California Board of Equalization is something that most people pay no attention to. It's one of those boards that, you know, does important work, but it's not on most people's minds every day. but her time in the assembly and really understanding the importance of interactions between state government and county government. And as we know, there's a lot of that as money gets transferred down to the counties to implement a lot of state government programs. And so I think having that set of knowledge is important to have. So I think highlighting that is a good strategy. So I think those are the two front runners in this race. Peter Fung has raised a significant amount of money. So in terms of money is seen as, I think, is competitive, but I don't think in terms of has the quite the experience or a recognition that these other two candidates. But, you know, again, we could be surprised, but going in, this is how I look at it.
Thank you for that. One other race for Board of Supervisors. Well, actually, there's two, but Otto Lee in District 3 is running unopposed. So the only other contest here is District 2, which is Cindy Chavez's seat. Several candidates here, Betty Duong, Chavez's chief of staff, Alum Rock Unified, Union School District Board Member Karina Herrera-Loera, Jennifer Celaya, founder of nonprofit New Beginnings, as well as former San Jose Vice Mayor Madison Nguyen and practicing attorney Nelson Meckelmurray. Now, it seems like, even in our reporting and from what we've just seen in the community, it seems like the race is really starting to be set up between Betty Duong and Madison Nguyen. I'd like your input on that. Garrick, let's start with you on this.
Yeah, I think this is a two-person race, and in many ways, obviously, as you said, there are more than that, more candidates. But if there's really the two in terms of the top two, Betty Duong and Madison Nguyen, in terms of fundraising, and then there's a big drop off in terms of fundraising. Karina Herrera has some money, but not a lot to be, I think, competitive at this level. Potential history making here, both Betty Duong and Madison Nguyen, if one of either of them are elected, would be the first Vietnamese American supervisors elected in the county. So I think that's a really important distinction, and that's providing an important backdrop to this race. So I think both of them, Duong and Nguyen, are would be the two I pick moving forward. And I would just say that Nguyen is a well-known politico in the area, served as vice mayor of San Jose, has high name recognition, and is really running a race that focuses on accountability, as she calls it, sort of tracking how money that's in taxpayer money, and particularly issues like homelessness, is being spent. And I think that could gain a lot of traction for people seeing some of the problems with homelessness in the region.
It's a good race. Both as Asian Americans running. I'm trying to think of the last time an Asian, well, Otto Lee, of course, is in there right now, so that ends that question. But this is a great business labor clash. I mean, and everybody's pretty open about it. You know, labor wants Duong in there because, as you know, she's got Cindy Chavez's views, which are worried about those who are at the bottom of the ladder. She's got progressive and liberal backing. Nguyen, of course, worked for the Chamber of Commerce for a while. Of course, is a former assembly member. I love this race because it's going to tell us a lot about the power of those behind these two candidates. And I think it's going to be a good one. I expect those two to run off, and I expect it to be close. It'll be a good race to watch.
Now, let's move on to the San Jose City Council. There's several seats up for grabs here in Districts 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10. I have a couple questions coming up, but Garrick, I'd like to just ask, which races do you feel are the ones to watch closely? You know, what are the tight races? What really matters? What should people be paying attention to?
Right. So this election cycle, we have all of the even number district, as you mentioned, and some of these have incumbents. I put sort of incumbents in quotes in the sense that we have a couple of candidates who are currently in office, but had not been elected by the people. They were appointed by the city council. So both Domingo Candelas in District 8, and then Arjun Batra in District 10. Those will be interesting races to watch just because of that dynamic. But another, I think, important race to look at is an open race in District 2, where Sergio Jimenez has been termed out. if, say, a candidate like Joe Lopez, who's run before and not successfully, but has the endorsement of Silicon Valley Business PAC and Realtors, I believe, if he manages to win, that could potentially shift some of the balance on the city council more towards a more business-friendly coalition that Mahan supports. I tend to think that some of those sort of labels are overblown and don't mean all of that much on a lot of issues. But in terms of, you know, typically how we think of business versus labor on the council, District 2, District 8, District 10, those are, I think, sort of the potential swing elections for balance of power on the council this time.
Did you know that 90% of a child's brain develops by age 5? That's why children who attend high-quality childcare, preschool, and transitional kindergarten programs are more academically and socially ready for kindergarten by age 5. Santa Clara County has many options for families. Find a program for your child at enrollsantaclara.org.
I'd also like to talk about District 4. This is potentially the only race on the city council where there may be a winner decided in March, because there's only two candidates. We have incumbent David Cohen and former council member and assembly member Canson Chu. Garrick, do you see Cohen keeping his seat or Chu taking it from him? It seems like Chu's kind of rallying here right at the end.
Yeah, this is a really interesting race because, you know, Canson Chu has served on the city council before, went and served in the, was elected to the state assembly. I think, though, David Cohen still stands a good chance of winning this race. David Cohen's been, you know, in the community, working in the community, a former school board, longtime school board member. I think has done a lot of work to focus on, for lack of a better, sort of bread and butter issues, so sort of traditional local politics issues, streets, sidewalks, parks, really running a race that focuses on the work that he's done. It's hard to beat an incumbent, as Larry was saying earlier. So there's an incumbency advantage here. And then the other issue I think that Canson Chu runs into, he's run for a lot of different offices, ran for the assembly seat a couple of years ago, didn't get through the primary, ran for the Board of Supervisors. It starts to paint an image of Canada not knowing exactly what he wants to do. And I think that could serve as a disadvantage here. Although, you know, on the other side, he's well known within the area, longtime member of the community and a longtime community leader. So if I had to pick, I would say Cohen will win this election, but it will be, I think, pretty competitive.
Larry, do you have anything to add?
I agree with Garrick, especially about Chu. Chu has been around a long time now and not had success the last three times, I think, he's run. And after a while, you kind of wonder about it. The other side of it is, like Garrick said, he's got name recognition. But is there any reason to depose Cohen? Is there any reason? Has he done something that deserves being, defeated in office? And, you know, that's a tough one because once you're in, you're in. And you've got to demonstrate that you're not worthy of getting reelected. And that's, I'm not sure that he's... he's had that problem. I think that the next District 6, by the way, is a really good race. Got some very capable candidates there, and that's open. And we're sure to see a runoff on that one when it comes to November. So, you know, the big question I think about the City Council is, you know, I think it's tilted toward labor in the last couple of years, not strongly, but tilted. Labor has a lot at stake here. Mahan tilts to the other side. And I think most of these outcomes, Cohen is not one of them, will in some way tell us more about what happens there between the labor and business poll over the next couple of years.
Garrick, I wanted to go back to something that you had touched on with Districts 8 and 10. The incumbents, Domingo Candelas in D8 and Arjun Batra in D10, they were appointed after the last election cycle because Mahan became mayor and Sylvia Rennes went on to the Board of Supervisors. It was a contentious process. I mean, even the council trying to decide if they should let voters make the decision or if they should just appoint themselves, that was contentious. So I'm just curious what kind of baggage these incumbents might be facing going into this race since they weren't elected. Like they are the incumbent. You know, you were saying earlier that incumbents tend to have an advantage. But I think in these two races, it's kind of a special case in how they're the incumbents.
Yeah, I guess I don't really see it as baggage. In fact, if I'd want to be in their position. Honestly, I would rather be someone has a record to run on, who has gained experience in city government, has been able to build your network, make friends, point to your successes. I think that gives you an advantage. Now, how much of an advantage may not be a big one, but I would rather be in that position than not be in that position. I don't think probably most people are going to hold it against these candidates for being appointed. My guess is a lot of people have sort of forgotten that by now anyway. So, you know, I think it gives, you know, both of these candidates, both these incumbents have been able to get to know their districts better and help frame their elections around their work that they've done. So, I think District 8 will be competitive. Candelas is my pick for the top vote getter, but I think we will have a runoff. Bonnie Walls is my choice to make it through to the runoff. So I think both of those candidates were some, I think some had top supporters within the city council as well. So. Anyway, so I'll leave it at that. I don't know if Larry has any things to add to that, but two really interesting races.
Yeah, I mean, it could wind up being a rematch in November. Well, rematch is not a fair statement because Candelas was the appointee. Bonnewell was a candidate, and he made the finals list, as I recall. And again, it's a labor business fight, which I like to see. I mean, it's like you get a dynamic there. Candelas does have several city council members endorsing him. Does that have an impact? I don't know. But I think I agree with Garrick. He's got to be the favorite. He's had close to a year to not only get his name out, but show results from his presence. And that's a good thing to have. And again, people, it's a funny thing about these district elections. Sometimes they don't get the kind of attention, or at least people don't pay attention to all the things going on. And then people say, well, okay, I'll go with the guy who's there. You know, I'm not endorsing that, but that often happens. So it'll be a good one to watch. There's some great races this time around. I mean, the wonderful thing about a primary is that you got a pretty good choice among several candidates in several of these races. And for people who are interested and into it, they'll find a lot of differences in many of these races, which are worth mining and considering.
Yeah, just say one other thing, Nick. As Larry has pointed to, in the primary election, sometimes there's really just fine distinctions between the candidates. If you know all of their issues, this election cycle, everyone's talking about homelessness, everyone's talking about public safety, everyone's talking about economic recovery from the pandemic. And so what can often turn these races is people's connections to the communities, the neighborhoods, knowing, participating in neighborhood cleanups and, building those grassroots networks. That's what can tip the election in their favor. And we're talking about turnout here, which is, probably going to be around, my guess would be historically at the local level in these districts, this in the even year election cycles, we're looking at probably around 45% turnout, which will be higher, of course, on the top level tickets for president. But when we get down to these local races, probably looking at less than 50%. So it really is, getting people who you know out to vote. So that's critical in these races.
Just before we move off of the San Jose City Council, I wanted to bring up the mayor's race. So last election cycle, a measure was approved by voters to move the mayoral race to presidential election years, thinking that the turnout would increase. I find it interesting, though, that no one is really talking about the mayor's race. It doesn't seem like, you know, he's seen as like the business candidate or, the, you know, representing business interests on the council. The Labor Council didn't really put up any kind of candidate. They're more focused on the council seats rather than taking the mayor's seat back, at least this cycle. And he's running against the candidate is Tyrone Wade, a former marriage and family crisis counselor who used to run a homeless shelter. Is there any chance he could give Mahan a run for his money, or does Mahan essentially have the seat locked down?
Yeah, I mean, I played a role in moving the elections to presidential years, serving on the Charter Review Commission. I think we're not talking about the mayor's race because there really is no race to speak of. Tyrone Wade, I think last time he ran, got less than 3% of the vote. You know, there's lots of different reasons, I think, why Labor didn't put forward a candidate. But I think it's one of the primary reasons. It's hard to find a good candidate. So it takes, you know, takes a long time to you know, gain the experience, having the network, be able to raise the money. Cindy Chavez was probably the most clear favorite to do that. She decided not to run. I suspect in 4 years' time, we will have a competitive mayor's race, but I don't think it has anything to do with the election cycle per se. It's just the fact that there are no serious challengers to Mahan this time.
You know, San Jose is, I think, now the 11th largest city in this country, and I find it astounding that someone of stature, and I'm not trying to belittle Tyrone Wade here, but someone of stature did not step up to run against Mahan. One of the real surprises to me that developed in this primary early on. It will be interesting, to Garrick's point, and see what happens 4 years down the road. Mahan will have a much more of a record to defend or, you know, tout, and we'll see what happens. But he sure got a free ride this time, and it's great for him because it can help him spend more time working on his job rather than defending, you know, what he's done as a candidate. So that's a real advantage, and that may really accumulate for him 4 years from now. But we'll have to see. Like everything else, you have expectations, and mine was that given that this was basically 8 years ahead of us, mine was that somebody would be running.
Last question here. Garrick, you touched on voter turnout possibly being around 45%. I'm pretty sure that's higher or anticipated to be higher than the last primary, which I think was 30-something. I don't quite remember. I just wanted to get both of your takes, if you have any words for listeners at home who may be on the fence about voting or why participating in these local elections matter. I think it would be easy to see what's happening at the national level and be uninspired to want to participate in this system. Why should residents care about these local races?
I think for a lot of people, what local government does has the biggest impact on their daily lives. And so I think that's probably reason number one to participate. You know, have a voice in who leads our city, who leads our region. Having a voice in that decision making is really crucial. And, you know, democracies require participation. They require people to get informed. It requires people to take time to learn about the candidates and to cast a ballot. And so I think it's just really important for the health of our democracy. But beyond that, choosing who represents you and in a very diverse community, like ours, it's important to have representation from people of all backgrounds and experiences. And so that is crucial to, I think, feeling like you have a government that works for you. And so that's why I think it's important.
Larry, your thoughts?
You know, it's so interesting. And here's our political scientist hat on. Garrick's right. I mean, local government is, you can touch it. I mean, you can go down to a city council meeting. You can participate. You can exchange ideas with your elected member, your council member, or whatever. But not just San Jose, any place. I mean, it's the best place for people to attempt to impact government and perhaps have success. It's not that hard. And I just think that so many people get focused on the national picture. And I'm not belittling that for a moment. Of course it's important who you elect as president. Of course the Senate race is important. But it's so much easier to touch the outcome of an issue and impact the decision makers at the local level. And I just wish more people saw that, because I think voting is infectious. Once you get involved and you see perhaps you can have some impact, you look at doing that with other races, organizing with other people. It's got to start at the local level. And the less attention we pay to the local level, to me, in a way, that's the canary in the mine. It tells me that there's going to be a whole lot less up top. And that worries me. That worries me. I think turnout will be less than 45%. My guess is it'll be closer to 35. But even 45, you know, we're talking about 45% of the registered voters, not 45% of the potential. So already we've cut it down. And I think that's really sad. And I think our schools, among other things, have done an awfully bad job of not showing kids the importance of political participation at the local level, because that's the key to unlocking other forms of participation down the road.
Well, Garrick Percival and Larry Gerson, thank you so much for coming on the show. I always enjoy talking about this election stuff with you guys.
Great to be with you.
Yeah, thanks, Nick.
That's it for this episode of The Podlight, a podcast produced by San Jose Spotlight. I'm editor Nick Preciado. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.